saving money in your next project when you shop at Menards. We have everything you need for keeping your outdoor power equipment in tip-top shape. Ensure your lawnmower or boat is running smooth this year. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale. View our entire selection of FVP batteries today on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of the great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back, friend. Finally, a day worth celebrating. On this day in 1775, we got ourselves an army. 2 years later, we got ourselves a flag. 8 more years and Bourbon County was founded, bringing us the official spirit of America. So happy Flag Day, Army Birthday, and National Bourbon Day. Hashtag America. Oh yeah, and it's also National Bubble Bath Day. So I squirted a little soap in Chester's bog for him. Have fun, pal. All right. SimplyScaryPodcast.com is a thing, have you heard? You can become a patron there and listen to thousands of scary stories, no ads or anything. Just click on the patron button, fire up the bubble bath, and listen away. And don't sleep on Patreon.com/DrewBlood either. That's also a thing. Just saying. So our first tale tonight comes courtesy of Sicily 1987. In it, we join a group of 4 on a camping trip who have seemed to have lost their path. So without further delay, from author Sicily 1987, I give you Lost in the Endless. We walked on and on, the 4 of us. Me, my girlfriend, my brother, and his girlfriend. Hope of a rescue was beginning to fade. The forest around us was suffocating, pushing up against us as we walked through the thorns and brambles of the undergrowth. Barely any sky could be seen through the treetops, but what could be seen was the dark blue of pre-dawn. We had been walking for hours, and the sun never rose. My watch said it was 4 p.m. We had been walking now for about half the day. The others were starting to panic, and I couldn't blame them. The surrounding forest was dead quiet. No animals made any noise, and no bugs skittered underneath. No birds in the trees. The forest didn't even look the same. The trees were tall and thin, surrounded by vines and thorns. The trunks only growing 2 to 3 feet apart. I turned back to my girlfriend, Casey. She was covered with tiny scratches from the thorns, her face stained with dirt and tears.
What do we do now?
She asked frightfully. I thought for a moment. We had followed the compass north. We should have come across a road, a town, or civilization. Hell, a landmark of any kind would be nice. But it was all flat ground and the same trees and the dead silence and the unchanging sky. There was a smell, though. A wet, sour smell. It permeated everything. It even soaked into my clothes, into the taste of the food we brought. It had all started as a camping trip to the local state park. I had been many times to the park with my brother during the past, and once with my girlfriend. This was the first time we were all getting together, my brother bringing along his new girlfriend. We left the parking lot to head towards our usual camping ground on a sunny morning. It would be about a 20-minute hike to our chosen campsite. It was a nice cleared-out area, next to a pond with big jutting rocks on one side. I would climb those rocks as a kid, and my girlfriend used them to sunbathe on our last visit. Things went bad about 10 minutes into our trek to the campground. The sky darkened and the trees pushed in, getting tighter and tighter. And of course, there was the sour smell. It flooded the area and stuck to the back of my throat. Our surroundings had become completely different and alien. It seemed like we were in a completely different forest. We were originally heading south, so we promptly turned around to head back north. We had been walking for hours now, and still haven't left the strange forest. We finally had to set up camp for rest. We were huddled together, the trees forcing us to be close to each other. I leaned around a tree to talk with my brother Dave. "Did somebody drug us, like human trafficking or something, and we just woke up here in these unfamiliar woods? That's why we don't remember the time between," I offered up. "Once I took an Ambien, and I didn't even know I fell asleep. Next thing I know, I'm at work the next day. I didn't even remember driving or anything." Jack's girlfriend Sharon agreed with me by nodding her head.
"No, this is some supernatural shit," my brother Dave interjected. "How do you not admit this, even now?"
he scolded at me. To my ire, my girlfriend nodded in agreement with him. Dave had always been a believer in the paranormal. He watched all those stupid ghost shows and was way too into ancient aliens when that show was a thing. He swore to death we had both seen a ghost when we were kids at our old house. I didn't remember any of it, and he told me I must have blocked it out because it was too world-shattering for me. I think I didn't remember it because it never happened. I wasn't a diehard skeptic. I was vaguely religious. I believed in the afterlife. But call me a doubting Thomas. I needed physical proof before I devoted any physical action towards anything. But all this was too much. Did my brother really think we were on another planet or something?
"It's like the Upside Down,"
my girlfriend Casey said. I looked at her like she was a crazy person. We had both watched Stranger Things on Netflix together. Now she was insinuating we were in the spooky world from the show.
"Or we're in hell,"
said Sharon. I looked at her with a sense of betrayal. How could she go from being a skeptic to full-blown tinfoil hat? Her statement held in the air between the four of us. Sharon had a vacant look. Did she believe she deserved hell?
"It is exactly how I imagined it,"
she said, looking down, her voice breaking at the end.
"Wait, hell?"
I asked back immediately.
"No, the forest. I was a little afraid of camping in the woods at night. A couple of nights ago I had..."
Sharon paused, thinking of the words.
"A stress dream about the trip. In the dream we couldn't find our way out. It wasn't scary, just frustrating. Like dreaming you're back at work or school. I used to have them when I was a sleep-deprived server and full-time student last year,"
my girlfriend chimed in.
"I would dream I'd be triple-sat by the hostess, and I couldn't find my pin. Orders weren't right, and customers were assholes. I would wake up so angry."
"Exactly,"
Sharon responded.
"In my dream, it was the same bland, suffocating forest."
She was crying.
"Now I'm just waiting to wake up."
Since I had been nominated as the de facto leader, I told the three to change the subject. We would eat, sleep a little, and continue north. The hours passed ad nauseum for over the next 48 hours. We had left lots of our food supplies in my brother's car. The plan was to make a trip back for the cooler after we had the camp set up. So now we only had food for the next 3 days, if we rationed severely. We kept heading north, the only direction we had to follow. The woods remained the same, like a lazy video game developer just copy and pasted the same tree over and over again. The sky remained the same, a dark blue with no stars, no clouds. The only thing that changed was the smell. The sickly sweet smell got worse and worse. I felt the urge to spit because the taste was heavy in my mouth, but I needed all the liquid I had to stay in my body. The first day, there was a lot of arguing between all of us. It was a free-for-all of emotions. We all tried to rationalize what was happening, and nothing made sense. The second day, we counted days by sleep. We all tried not to fight and get along. We had to work together to get through this. We marched forward like soldiers heading to an epic battle. But nothing changed. The supplies dwindled, and hope was flickering out. The third day, all hope was lost. I led us ever north, but they followed with heads down and eyes sullen. It was like we were prisoners on a death march now. When we called it quits on the third day, we all sat in separate corners, not talking. I turned my phone on for the last time. I had been conserving battery, but it was at 5% now, and I need to see something other than the forest around me to keep me sane. I flipped through my pictures. The pictures went back years. Me and my parents, me and Dave, my pets, and me and Casey, happy on dates. It was exactly what I needed. I called Casey over to look at the pics with me. Dave and Sharon sat separate, both staring vacantly out into the forest.
"It's like the back rooms,"
Dave said out loud to no one in particular.
"What's that?"
Sharon asked, snapping out of her daze.
"It's a creepypasta or an internet story. It's this world beneath or parallel to ours," he explained. "It's just random rooms over and over, like a video game set to create random environments. You reach it when you glitch out of reality. It's like a developer failsafe, or that's how I interpret it."
"But it's fake," I stated. At the same time, Casey spoke over me.
"Can you escape it?"
she asked much louder.
"Yes, you can, but it's convoluted. New writers keep changing up the rules,"
Dave said back to Casey, ignoring my statement.
"I mean," my bro continued, "it makes sense the back rooms are rooms in a city setting. But what if it's this bland forest and outdoor settings?"
"It's not real,"
I almost screamed.
"It's a story created by edgy teenagers and 30-year-olds still living with their mothers."
"It makes more sense than marching north continuously hoping to magically end up back in our car,"
Dave screamed back.
"You're literally a skeptic living in a real waking nightmare. Now you just look like a dumbass."
I felt like hitting him, and I almost launched over and did. Casey grabbed my arm hard and Sharon spoke up.
"It doesn't matter,"
she said, breaking into tears.
"We are in hell and it's very real. Or at least limbo. Have any of you used the restroom since we've been here?"
Sharon continued, her voice growing angry as tears streamed down her face.
"Have you even taken a piss? Have you even been hungry? We eat out of habit. Did you even taste it?"
We all sat silent, thinking.
"You can't even have sex,"
Sharon spouted.
"Me and Dave tried. You feel nothing."
Dave's face went bright red, and me and Casey got secondhand embarrassment from him. We knew they went out of sight the other day. We figured what was up, we just didn't want to know the details. "It's stress," I muttered. "The body locks up. It cuts out all non-essential functions for survival. People in wartime have been known to..."
"I don't care anymore,"
she interrupted my feeble attempt at an explanation.
"I just want this to be over. If I have to die to do so, then I want to die."
At that moment, I heard two tremendous crashes behind me. I was the one in the group sitting the furthest north, facing back south to talk with my friends. Something gigantic moved over the trees above me. I saw Sharon look up in horror as a giant object, as tall and wide as an oak tree, slammed down onto her. Shattering the tree she was leaning against and pulverizing her body into red mush. We all screamed and jumped up. All I saw left of Sharon was a right leg, separated at the knee.
I looked up to see a massive object blotting out the sky. I realized I was looking up at the underside of a giant creature. It walked on two large but thin legs compared to the rest of its body. One of its legs had come down on Sharon. The other was straddled somewhere behind me. The leg stretched upwards about 50 feet to a large bulbous black mass. The underside of this mass opened up like a curved smile, dropping mucus and spit upon us like rain. Inside this horrid mouth-like opening were white teeth, but these teeth were white human skulls. The skulls all lined up beside each other. They all screamed down at me. To our credit, the three of us all took off in the same direction. Moments after escaping the campsite, the mouth dropped down to slam into the ground where we had been. Trees splintered and exploded. The massive skull-filled mouth taking a giant bite out of the earth. As it lifted back up, dirt and mucus rained everywhere. We ran for at least 10 minutes at top speed. It was easy to keep track of each other, being the only other things making noise and moving in the drab woods. At first, we could hear the massive footsteps following us, but when those faded, we slowed down to a speed walk, trying to catch our breaths.
"Did you see that thing?"
my brother wheezed, asking the stupidest question in history.
"It was a Titan, like from the anime."
"What?"
I said.
"It was a blob with human skulls for teeth," I corrected.
"I saw a clown,"
Casey added.
"A giant harlequin clown, tall like it was on stilts. It killed Sharon."
The one thing we all agreed on was it killed Sharon. So we kept power walking. And when the booming footsteps got too loud, we sprinted again. Even though hunger and bodily functions didn't affect us here, fatigue did. We were always tired, and we were all about to drop from exhaustion. That's when my brother grabbed my shoulder and spun me around. We all stopped for a moment.
"I'll run back the opposite direction. I'll run by it and peel it off from you two."
"Hell no. Stop with this hero shit," I said to him.
"I wasn't asking, little brother."
He smiled.
"Besides, there's a 50% chance it will keep chasing you two, and I'll be free. If we stay together, we all get tired and die together. I have to at least say goodbye to Sharon. I brought her here to die. I at least owe her that," he said flatly.
With a final "I love you, bro," he turned and jogged off in the other direction. Me and Casey kept heading north, and the stomping from behind faded away. We walked together, shoulder to shoulder. I held most of her weight as we trudged forward. She had given up, but I hadn't just yet. The only thing that kept me going was the why of all of this. Why had all our lives been destroyed in the matter of days? Why did the forest look like the dream Sharon had? Why did the creature look different to all of us? I had to know.
"I just wish we could have found our campsite,"
Casey croaked.
"I was so excited for this trip. I just wanted to see it one more time."
And just as she wished, we staggered through the trees a little while longer. We came out into a clearing, and there it was. The campsite she had asked for. The pond with the rocks stacked up beside it. But it wasn't quite right. The pond was shaped different, and the water was clearer looking, and the rock formation on the side was bigger, like how I remembered them when I was a kid. Casey laughed a dry laugh.
"It was my death wish."
She urged me to take her atop the rocks. Instead of being 20 feet high, it was at least 35 to 40 feet. Once we got to the top of the big rock, she went to the middle and laid down, like she would when she sunbathed. I knelt down beside her and she pulled me close.
"This is fun. I want to die here beside you. I just want to sleep, not be killed by that wicked thing."
She pulled me to lay down, but I refused her.
"Just lay here with me.
Let's just go together,
she urged. I have to know, I whispered to her. I have to know why it happened. Why do we all have to die here?
Just ask, babe,
she said. She closed her eyes and smiled.
I'll wait for you.
And with that, she exhaled, and the color left her face. Her red lips turned gray, and her blonde hair turned white. I knew she was dead, just like she asked. I knelt over her and wept. Once again, I heard the booming footsteps approaching. I knew Dave was dead. The thing had caught up with him, probably when he finally said goodbye to Sharon. It was his dying wish. I stared out to the infinite trees around me. I could imagine it was the same panorama view of trees behind me also. The only difference would be the monster slowly plodding its way towards me. Just tell me why, and I'll let you kill me. If not, I will run forever. I'll make you chase me forever. I yelled to anyone and no one. I heard a thunderous boom behind me. The rock shook and I fell forward onto my face. In an instant, I felt a presence in my mind. A perverse intrusion of 1,000 tainted thoughts. And I knew things. I knew the monster had teleported the rest of the distance to appear right behind me, as if it was a genie being beckoned to my command. I had summoned it. The sour stench was overwhelming and my fear was like tarantulas crawling inside my skull as I keep from shrieking. I knew if I turned around, it would be bigger and more hideous than before. I just knew it had taken the form of something I truly feared. It was now something unfathomable and cruel to my eyes, my psyche. A monster customized to terrify only me. To kill only me. I knew it would drive me mad just to glance at it, so I laid prostrate on my face and dared not move. The forbidden knowledge spoke, and I knew now that the compass had been leading us to this wretched thing the whole time. I knew if I pulled out my compass now, it would say north was directly behind me, directly where this thing stood. This whole time we had been marching towards our executioner, towards our inevitable death. Its stench flooded my senses, and I could hear its wet, sickly breathing, like the sound of a beached whale dying of asphyxiation.
Tell me why!
I screamed with madness.
Why are we condemned to die here?
I felt a ticking in my head and I felt a full-blown panic attack coming on. It was trying to speak to me, and my mind was about to break because of it. I had to hold on to sanity long enough to get my answers.
Why?
I asked again as the tendrils of madness dug deeper. Its voice shot like lightning through my mind. 1,000 words in 1,000 different languages, all flowing around each other to form a single idea. It felt like millions of years worth of knowledge had been dumped into my brain. Things no one should know. But in this madness, I got my explanation, and my heart broke at the unfairness of it. I began clawing at my face and screaming. The abomination told me I was dying for no reason. It told me there are places on Earth where the veil between realities is thinner. They were once used by ancient gods from eternity past as gateways through other dimensions. Gateways used by entities that existed before the Big Bang, from beyond time. Entities not tied to the concepts of space and time like mortal man. Gods beyond all concept of good or evil, cruelty or kindness. These old gods eventually built safeguards around these portals to keep each other from invading other realms. Me and my friends could have walked into an alternate dimension exactly like our own and never realized. But now the portals were booby-trapped.
If anyone now tried to travel between realms, it would spit them out in a side dimension. A bleak non-world sealed away from reality. The world forms to whoever has been trapped here, and whoever is trapped would eventually be killed by this creature, this warden between realities. The monstrous warden showed me this plane of existence had been nothing but darkness before we showed up. As we entered it, the realm it had been instantly created. As soon as we had entered, we had been condemned to die. Condemned for breaking a law we did not know, made by beings that did not care. I was now dying in a pool of my own blood, my eyes missing, and my throat torn out by my own hand. I asked one last time mentally to the cruel warden before I faded away, "Will we be stuck here after death?" The answer came, "No. We would pass on from this realm upon our death." I died in agony with only this to comfort me. I only had one final thought to comfort me as I sunk into oblivion. You see, I was a skeptic in most things, but I believed in the afterlife. I had hoped the monster was telling the truth, and at least I would escape this endless hell when I died. And just maybe, somewhere, Casey would be waiting for me. That was Lost in the Endless by author Cecily, 1987. You know, those ancient gods never did follow the camping rules of etiquette, like clean up your interdimensional gateways, for example. Anyway, a little about the author. Cecily, 1987, has a background in law enforcement, corrections, and security. At this point in his life, he'd rather write about crazy incidents than experience them firsthand. He names all his cats after anime characters and is a fan of Stephen King, Warhammer 40K, Silent Hill, and Max Payne. Thanks, Cecily. Our next story tonight comes courtesy of our pal Rory Duane. In this one, we join a bartender on the anniversary of a very dark day. So without further delay, I give you, from author Rory Duane, A Spider's Web. The doorbell jingled above as Mike walked out into the street to wave goodbye to his daughter. Cindy was standing beside a fire hydrant, her bright white dress lit up by the streetlights above her, making her appear to glow in the dark surroundings. The silver necklace given to her by her grandmother shimmered, the jewels twinkling on the ivory dove in its center. He calls to her, and she turns and smiles back at him. A motorbike speeds around the corner, skidding to a halt in front of her. A slim man in a balaclava jumps off the back of the bike, holding a revolver. Mike rushes towards them. One of the pistol barrels flashes, and Cindy's necklace is snatched as she falls to the pavement. Mike crouches beside Cindy as the motorbike pulls away with two of the thieves on it, leaving a smoke trail curling up underneath the streetlights.
"It's nothing personal,"
one of them calls back, a female voice, breaking into a high-pitched cackle. Mike looks down and sees that there's blood gushing from a bullet hole in Cindy's forehead. The image begins to blur as the memory fades. The energy in the bar shifts as the music on the record switches from bitter and reminiscent to upbeat and hopeful. Mike shook off the daydream. He glanced around the bar, remembering it was empty. Looking through the front window, he saw that the street outside was empty. The white neon light in the corner of the bar's window flashed, turning the specks of water on the outside of the glass from gray to white. He took a deep breath and looked up at Cindy's picture hanging over the bar. The people around town had said he was crazy not to sell the place after her murder, but having lost his only blood left in the world, he felt that the bar had too many connections to his past to be left behind just yet. There was also the fact of the handful of bodies buried in the cellar. He had hunted after his daughter's killers for years, but he had never found them, only their associates. Each member had told him the same name, the killer's alias, Spider. He took down a bottle of whiskey and poured himself a drink. Sunday nights were always a graveyard shift, but the raging storm outside had cut any chance of a conversation tonight. It was 5 years to the day of the murder of Cindy. Mike raised the shot glass to her picture and then knocked it back. He put it in the sink and walked over to the neon sign and then reached down to unplug it. Just as he laid his fingers on the plug, the bell over the door jingled. He turned around and saw a tall, beautiful lady shake the rain from her dark hair. She took off her fur coat and hung it up on a hanger.
Hi, Mike.
Tingles brushed up and down his spine at the sound of her voice.
I was just closing, ma'am. Do I know you?
She gave a heartfelt laugh, the mole on her cheek moving as the skin on her face creased up into a smile.
Not at all, sugar. The sign outside this lovely establishment says Mike's Bar. I'd assume that would mean you. Is it too late to get a nightcap?
She gave the empty bar a sweep of her gaze, her eyes resting on the picture of Cindy. Mike walked behind the counter, gesturing for her to take a seat.
What's your poison, Mrs.?
Scarlet. Ms. Scarlet.
Ms. Scarlet. A beautiful name for a beautiful lady.
She gave one more of her deep, infectious laughs, her eyes focused on his and filled with a mischievous interest.
Gin, please, Mike.
Mike took down the bottle and spun it in his hand. He took out a glass and flipped it into the air, catching it. He poured the measure, grinning as she lightly applauded his trickery. She sat on the stool, folding one long, smooth leg over the other. Mike noticed she was looking at the picture of Cindy again.
It's of my daughter.
How sweet. She's a smart-looking girl. Reminds me of someone. Can't put my finger on it, though.
She knocked back her drink.
She sure does. Freshen up that drink?
You're my kind of man, sugar.
She stood up.
Could you point me to the ladies' room?
Mike pointed at the door in the corner. She waddled over and disappeared with a backward glance. He poured her another measure, slipped the bottle back on the shelf, and then began to wipe down the counter. The doorbell jingled. Mike turned and saw a large man dressed in black enter through the door. He wore a leather jacket. There were tattoos covering his neck and hands. Not his type of customer at all.
You still open, mister?
He said with a gruff voice, like dry stones grinding on gravel. Mike nodded. The man sat on a stool. The man noticed the drink on the counter and said,
Beer. Any kind.
Mike cracked open the bottle and slid it over the counter to him, noticing the man had a handful of scars on the side of his head.
Are you from town? I can't recall seeing you around here before.
The man caught the bottle.
I'm just passing through, friend.
He took a long drink from it.
I used to pretty much live on Route 666 back in the day. I guess I just felt the open road calling me back.
The man noticed Mike looking at his scars.
What are you looking at, friend?
Mike shook his head and went back to wiping down the counter. The bathroom door in the corner opened. It took Mike a moment to remember there was another customer in the bar. Scarlet walked back to her stool and sat down.
My poor little drink all alone,
said Scarlet, knocking it back, and then moaned in delight. She slid the glass towards Mike.
Fill me up, sugar.
You have a thing for barmen, eh, Legs? The man asked Scarlet.
Mike filled her drink and slid it back. Scarlet dipped her head and glanced sideways at the man.
You need to be charming to be a barman. Isn't that right, Sugar Mike?
She flashed Mike another smile.
And good looking too, honey,
Mike shot back, making her throw back her head, laughing. The man finished his bottle and slid it hard towards Mike. It brushed past Mike's fingertips, crashing onto the floor. Mike slowly turned his gaze from the smashed bottle to the man.
You want me to get onto the sheriff? He's a good friend of mine, so you keep that shit up and you'll be sleeping in a cell for the night.
Mike glanced at Scarlet and noticed she was throwing the man a look. The man stood up and walked off to the bathroom.
Some people,
Scarlet muttered and then took a drink.
I dealt with rougher. I done 8 years down in Folsom.
Her eyebrows rose.
Really, Sugar? A clean-cut boy like you?
Sure. It was another life. I used to help bootleg Shine up and down the country.
Mike laughed.
You can thank my wife for my businessman appearance. A mighty fine woman. Helped me stay on the straight and narrow.
You're married, honey?
Was. She died during childbirth.
Scarlet looked at him, the mischief disappearing, turning into something else. A silent moment passed between them, and then Mike began picking up the glass shards on the ground. He put them into a bin and then sat down by the register. The tattooed man reappeared and sat back down on his stool. Mike was pretending to read a newspaper, but in the corner of his eye, he saw Scarlet exchange a quick glance with the man.
What?
The man shouted at her. Mike looked at him. The man's gaze was unblinking, searing into Mike. The man looked at Scarlet.
What? You wanna fuck him? That it?
Spider, don't!
No, fuck that. You wanna ride with me? You don't talk to other guys. You got me?
Your name is Spider? Mike asked.
You catch on quick, friend.
Spider took out a pack of cigarettes.
That's quite an unusual name, Mike said, standing up.
My name doesn't concern you, friend.
Spider lit a cigarette. Mike walked over to where he kept his belongings and his gun.
Well, I happen to know a man, Mike said, reaching in. Of that name. It was 5 years ago. Just outside this bar that I first met him.
Mike picked up the gun and rested his hand on the counter, pointing the gun right at Spider. He pulled back the hammer of his six-shooter. Scarlet looked up at the picture of Cindy, gasping.
No! That sweet little girl in the picture there?
Shut it!
Spider shouted, thumping his fist on the counter. He pointed his finger at Mike.
You ought to be mighty careful what you say next, friend. I ain't been around these parts for a long time, but I still know people.
You'd best not move any more there now, friend, Mike said. I've been looking for you for a long time, Spider. And I want some answers before I give you another hole to breathe through.
And what makes you think I care what you want?
Scarlet jumped as Mike's pistol flashed. The bullet caught Spider in the right shoulder, knocking him back off the stool. Mike pointed the gun at Scarlet.
Get him back up!
Scarlet jumped off the stool and began trying to pick Spider off the ground. Spider grunted as he tried to balance on the stool, pressing his hand down as he put pressure on the wound. Now, Miss Scarlet, be a good lady and unplug that sign over there. Yes, that one. Now, pull down that blind.
Spider, I told you not to move. The next one's going right into your face.
Now, Scarlet, lock the door.
Good. Now sit down.
Scarlet shot Spider a dirty look.
I told you we shouldn't have come up this way, but you kept insisting.
You keep talking and shot him not. I'll come over there and snap that little neck of yours,
Spider said. His face creased up as he bared his teeth at her, making him resemble more beast than man.
You wouldn't get two steps, Spider. Mike pulled back the hammer.
I didn't hurt your girl, Mike,
Scarlet said.
I've only known Spider for a couple of years.
You expect me to believe that horse shit? Said Mike. There were two people on that bike that night, and one of you shot her. I don't believe that shit about you not knowing each other. So why'd you come back up this way, huh? To finish the job? Try to squeeze a little bit more green from my blood?
Spider told me he used to be a part of a motorbike gang, and that he found their address and was headed up that way. The Street Hogs or something.
Spider's lip curled in disgust as he looked at her.
Well, I should have buried you a long time ago. The boys were right about you.
They're called the Road Hogs, isn't that right? Mike smiled. Spider stayed silent. His eyes focused on the pistol. Mike slammed his hand down on the counter.
Isn't that right?
Yes, you're right. Jesus. They're my motorbike crew, but we don't pull no shit like that. We might rough up an odd bar or two, but cold-blooded murder? Hell no. We normally hole up in Florida for the winter, and that's where we were headed.
You were headed. Oh, you don't have to go there to find them, Mike said.
What?
Your crew. I actually had the pleasure of meeting them. Spider laughed.
My crew would eat you up.
The pistol fired again. The bullet whizzed past Spider's head and hit the wall behind him.
Fuck! Okay, I'm cool,
said Spider, holding up his hands.
Consider that the final warning.
Mike pulled back the hammer, then reached over and took Cindy's picture from the wall.
Let's have a little reunion, shall we?
The two customers were ushered to the hallway, then down a flight of stairs into the basement. Spider looked around.
What? Are you gonna shoot us down here?
And ruin the special surprise? No. Mike tossed the picture of Cindy over to Scarlet, who caught it. Now, Spider, you see that shovel over there? Yeah, that one.
Get digging.
Spider began to dig up the hard-packed dirt floor. Scarlet was looking at the picture of Cindy and shaking her head.
I'm so sorry, sugar,
she whispered.
Sorry won't bring her back, will it?
For what it's worth, Mike, I know how you feel,
Scarlet said with tears forming in her eyes.
I lost my little girl, too, when she was only 3 years old. She got knocked down right outside the house.
Don't do that. Don't try to make it the same.
But I didn't do it, sugar. I didn't kill your girl. I'd know how it hurts, and I'd never want to do that to anyone.
Spider stopped digging and pointed the shovel at Scarlet.
Bullshit. You know what? I'm not covering for you no more. Mike, she was the one who shot your little girl. She told me one night all about our little jobs we'd done. You really think I'd do that? I don't kill chicks, man.
He shoved the spade into the dirt.
I'm not dying for the one crime I didn't commit.
Shut it, both of you. I remember like it was yesterday. I remember that it was you who shot her, Spider. You were on the bike. But don't worry. There are plenty of bullets in the chamber for everyone. Keep digging.
Spider finished digging the hole. A skull was sticking out in one corner.
What makes you so sure it was me?
Said Spider, looking at the skull.
Your voice, and the fact that your name is Spider, and you drive a fucking bike, and that your gang ratted you out. That's all I need to know before I put you in the dirt.
You go ahead, put me in the goddamn dirt, said Spider. See if I give two shits about your little fucking Cindy. She can go rot in hell for all.
Mike pulled the trigger. The bullet hit Spider in the center of the forehead.
Spider dropped to his knees and fell into the hole, smacking his head off the skull. Scarlet smiled.
You're my kind of man, Sugar.
She fixed Mike with a lustful, hungry stare and took a slow step forwards.
Don't!
Scarlet raised her hands.
Look, honey, I don't want to be no old lady no more. And I'm tired of the road. I think,
she said, taking another step towards him.
I think that me and you are one of the same. I can feel your pain, Sugar.
She took another step. Mike wanted to pull the trigger, but he just couldn't do it.
And I know I can make the pain go away. All I need to do...
She leapt at him, ducking under the bullet as the gun went off. She grabbed the gun. Mike felt teeth sink into the side of his face. And then her knee connected with his crotch. Mike pushed her off, tearing the top of her dress open, and then hit her in the face with the butt of the gun. She stumbled backwards, tripping over the dirt pile and falling into the hole, landing on Spider.
Bitch!
He spat as he walked over to the hole. And then he saw it.
The necklace,
Mike whispered. Scarlet looked down at the silver necklace, the ivory dove resting between her brassiere. Scarlet smiled.
I guess you've caught me then, Sugar.
Take it off now!
Why, aren't we getting frisky? And it's about time, too.
Mike aimed the gun at her. She snatched the chain from her neck, throwing it up to him.
So what, Sugar? Are you going to kill a woman? That won't make it any better. She's gone. There ain't no coming back from that,
she said as she sat up. He lowered the pistol. Scarlet nodded.
That's it, Mike. Let go. Me and you, anywhere you want. Anything you want.
It's nothing personal. He aimed the gun at her and let the hammer fall. The bullet caught Scarlet between the eyes. She went cross-eyed and slumped back into the hole. He picked up the shovel and began to bury his past for good. The doorbell jingled above as Mike walked out into the deserted street. He noticed that the rain had stopped and a mist was beginning to creep up the street. He locked up the door, climbed onto the motorcycle, and switched on the ignition, the bike coming to life with a deep grumble. He took one last look at the bar. The sidewalk in front of it was illuminated by the light coming from inside. It sure was nice that he had gotten that fire insurance after all. The bike sped off down the street, the trailing smoke curling up underneath the streetlights. And that was A Spider's Web by author Rory Duane. A little about the author. Rory, also known as R.C.J. Duane, is an author living in the Midlands of Ireland. He is currently writing a young adult novel based on a dream he had, titled Delvere, College of Dreams and Magic. You can check out his website at roryduaneart.wordpress.com. Hey, thanks, Rory.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a bourbon for the road, friend. And by bourbon, I mean here's an MGD. I thought you were bringing the bourbon. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. May neighbors respect you, trouble neglect you, the angels protect you, and go fuck yourself. Ah, good night, y'all.